Today's Taisho will be on case 24 in the Mumonkan, in the Gate of No Barrier. Case 24 is entitled Fuketsu's Speech and Silence. A monk asked Fuketsu, "Both speech and silence are faulty in being re or be. How can we escape these faults?" Fuketsu said. How can we escape these faults? Period. Fuketsu said, "I always remember the spring in Konan where the partridges sing. How fragrant the countless flowers." Mumon's comment, "Fuketsu's Zen spirit was like lightning and opened a clear passage. However, he was entangled in the monk's words and could not cut them off. If you can really grasp the problem, you can readily find the way out." Now, putting language samadhi aside, say it in your own words. Mumon's verse, he does not use a refined phrase. Before speaking, he has already handed it over. If you chatter on and on, you will find you have lost your way. So a monk asked Fuketsu, "Both speech and silence are faulty in being re or be. How can we escape these faults?" That's the question. And then Fuketsu recites that poem. Some of you have done Dokusan. Some of you have gone to Sesshin, and after meditating for a day, you've come into the Dokusan room. And so you understand a little bit more about the context for this koan. This koan, which is quite well known as neither speech nor silence. If you were working on this koan, you might come into the Dokusan room and say something. You might say, "I'm working on the speech and silence koan, and I've been thinking all day about how much I talk, and I have decided to try to do a little less talking," something like that. And the teacher might say, "But you're talking right now. You know, show me your true nature, which doesn't speak." And so you go away and you do some more zazen. And the next night you would come into Dokusan and you might sit down on the cushion and not say anything. And then I might say, "Well, how's your sitting going?" And you might think, "Is this a trap? You know, am I trying to lure you into a false answer?" So you're still silent. You know, I might say, "Well, you know, that's not a good answer either." Okay? So that would be classic Zen, right? So you go back to your cushion in the Zendo, and you think, "Okay, I spoke last night. Just now, I was silent. Neither of these is a good answer. What next? You know, what will I do next?" And that would be a good place to be. From a Zen standpoint, this is all about, this koan is all about how to be fully present. How to be fully present. Now, often in our lives, we aren't fully present. You know, we're distracted, we're fearful, we're anxious. We're impatient, we're angry, right? You might go to your job and it might be a pressure cooker. And all day long you're right on the edge of ruin, right, of disaster. You know, so you have, maybe you have to do get something in by the end of the day and nothing goes right, you know. you know, you're trying to get this project completed, and there, you know, somebody interrupts you. You're focused. You finally get to focus on something, and then the phone rings, and then you have to get up and go to a little meeting. You come back, and your focus is gone, and then, you know, maybe around 3 o'clock, you realize there's a big problem you didn't see, and then you're really panicking, right? Because you think, I've got to get this done by the end of the day, and I don't know if I can resolve this, and you have to call a friend, but your friend is not responding to the phone call, and so on. So, you know, at some point in the day, you feel like, get me out of here! Get me out of here! You might have the opportunity to sit that evening, and so you finally get the report in. You think, I hope it's okay. You get in your car. Maybe you drive over here. You sit down on a cushion, and it's like, quiet, you know, no pressure, calm, and you might think, oh, this is beautiful, this is beautiful, this is really what it's all about, you know, silence. So, you know, that's quite a common way of thinking about Zen practice. You know, the craziness of the day, and then, you know, you come to sit, you sit down on the cushion, and it's silence. And next day you go to work and you think, ah, if only I were in that silence, see? This is a crazy place, you know, and it all starts up again. As the day is going on, you know, you get to tense, you have another deadline, another problem, and you just sit in your office sometime and think, oh man, I can't wait to retire, you know, I'm going to get out of this job, I'm going to be on I'm going to retire in Hawaii next to the Diamond Sangha Zendo, and I'll get up every morning and go sit and listen to the minor birds or parrots, whatever they have in the trees there, and, you know, it'll be great. You know. Now, you know, if you keep thinking that way, actually, it's going to get harder and harder to go to work. And the abrasiveness of work, or the difficulty of work, is going to seem more and more unnatural and maybe hard to endure. And even though you might not think of it this way, you've created a barrier, a new barrier between yourself and the world, which prevents you from being present. Prevents you from being present. So as you're going through the day, you're kind of split in two, right? You're sort of split. You're here and you're not here. You're at your desk and you're doing your tasks, but then there's another part of yourself, so to speak, which is imagining being somewhere else where it's quiet and safe. And all day long, it's like there's two of you going through the day. There's the person who's meeting people, there's the person who's typing up something on your computer, and there's this other person who's sitting on a cushion somewhere else, and you want to sort of like be with that person and not be the person you are right now. So this is like a divided mind. In Zen, you know, we think of a divided mind as actually like a bad thing, so to speak, because it's not in the long run healthy to be divided in this way. It creates a kind of a hesitation or obstacles. As I say, every time you go to work, you're going to be thinking, oh, if only I were on the cushion. And if only, you know, the noisier it gets, the more that silence is going to be imagined as delicious and, you know, like salvation. Now look, there's nothing wrong with coming into the Zendo and sitting down on the cushion and enjoying the silence. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong after a tense day with doing zazen. That's I do it every day, you know, and I love it. And I have tense days too. And I come into the zendo and I sit down and it's like, ah, not a moment too soon. But we have to be careful not to create a barrier between ourselves and the world all over again. Yeah. So you know, if you cling to silence, if you cling to silence, you create a barrier. And if you cling to speech, you can create a barrier too. You know, you know, zazen is a wonderful thing because many people don't have this way of grounding themselves. My father was somebody who in retrospect, I feel really, I feel for. And I wish he had had something like meditation. Because my father had a pretty difficult job. He was in the Navy for a long time, and then he was in the Department of Defense. And he had a lot of stress in his life. And my father would come home, and he would, when I was a little boy, he taught me how to make a good martini. And I wasn't, you know, he would show me how to take the vermouth and coat the glass. And dump the vermouth in the sink, just a little bit of vermouth, and he'd show me just how much to put in. And I was just a kid. I would just carefully put it in and coat the glass. Then you add the vodka, and then you put the olive in, you know. And I would be so proud. I would take this cold, transparent drink to my father, and he would drink a number of those. And in fact, my father developed a problem with alcohol. But I understand why it happened, because he had no way of grounding himself. You know, he would just be like on a roller coaster of stress all the time. He'd get up, he'd be stressed, he'd be stressed, get home, have three drinks, you know, finally go to sleep, get up, stressed, and so on. So I feel sorry for my father, and I really, I'm really lucky to be able to sit down on the cushion and watch my breath and have a release from that terrible state of just constant anxiety, you know, constant pressure. But you know, if we're not careful, we can create a new obstacle between ourselves and the world. Very often in our lives, without knowing it, we separate ourselves from the world. And sometimes this happens through no fault of our own. Sometimes we just do it, without thinking. Recently, this last weekend, I had to go to a conference. It was like an English teachers' conference, and one afternoon I was supposed to meet a publisher at a party. The press was giving a party, so I left the conference, and there was a bus that took us outside of St. Louis to a very nice place, which was for entertaining. It was an old historical building in St. Louis that had been refurbished, and it was quite beautiful. And the publishers were hosting a little party there, and I was supposed to meet a publisher, one of the editors of this press. And so I got onto the bus, and it drove for like 25 minutes outside of St. Louis. And then I got out of the bus, and I went into place where they were having the party, which was this beautiful old 19th century building, which must have been like a stable or something, but it had been refurbished into this place for entertaining. There was a bar, there was a dance floor and a piano, there were tables and chairs for dinners to be served, there was a kitchen, and it was beautifully, the grounds were beautiful, and I came into this room, and I knew absolutely no one in the room. And that kind of a situation can be awkward if you're not an extrovert, and I'm not particularly an extrovert. So I don't know anybody, and a lot of people appeared to know each other, you know, and they're talking, and I was sort of making my way from one group of people to the next, and I'm trying to find people I can connect with, you know, and I'm very much feeling like an outsider, you know. I found somebody else who was just like me, wandering around. She was from MIT, and she too was trying to sort of get into one of these groups, and sort of unsuccessfully moving from group to group, and we were moving in opposite directions and through these groups, and finally I said hello, and she said hello, and she was eager to make some kind of a connection, and so we sat and talked. It was very refreshing, finally, not to be on the outside, not to feel this sense of separation. That sense of separation, of a barrier, is really uncomfortable. You know, there's something uncomfortable about that. And from the Zen standpoint, we consider, you know, that's not necessarily the best state to be in. It's not really a healthy state to go through your whole life feeling like you're outside of it, you know? When I met this woman from MIT, who fortunately was not an introvert, she was very extroverted, and she had a very salty, she's been married for 30 years, her husband is a research scientist at MIT, she has two grown kids, and she was absolutely hilarious, and totally irreverent, and she was pretty salty, you know. I mean, she was a funny person, you know, and she had very few boundaries sometimes. So I enjoyed her, you know. I really thought she was funny, and she was telling me all about her colleagues. She was making these portraits of her colleagues that were very funny too. I'm sure they wouldn't have thought so. But, the whole thing was a good experience for me because it got me out of myself, right? You know, made me feel less locked in, you know. And a little later, I got up and I was walking around, and this woman I know from way back, just she saw me and she jumped up and she came over and she said, "Kurt, you know, I'm so glad to see you, you know, how are you?" You know, and it was just so wonderful, right, to be connected. After that, I felt more porous, you could say, you know, more porous. So this sense of being like separate from everything else was less acute, less intense. And it was like I was able to open up and be with things as they were happening, you know. And this is, you know, when we get out of that feeling of isolation, stop feeling isolated or separate, and we begin to be with what's happening around us, it can be very pleasant, right? Really nice, you know. And so as this evening went on, as the afternoon went on into the evening, I was enjoying myself more and more because I was making more connections with people I didn't know before and people I knew before. And after a while, there wasn't really this sense of a boundary anymore. You know, when I had walked into that room, I felt very much like everything was very distant. And I'm over here in the corner, and there's this great separation. And I'm trying to crack these crowds, and I can't quite get in, and it intensifies my sense of isolation. And then this woman from MIT, opened the door a little bit. And we had, I was really, the more I was with her, the more I was enjoying her company and her very funny and irreverent humor. And then, you know, I met my friend who is just a really wonderful woman. And she was telling me about her grandchildren. She has a grandchildren now. And her husband is also a really nice guy. And we hadn't seen each other for years. And and we sat and talked, and it was just, I went from feeling very stiff and very outside to feeling very relaxed and part of it all, right? So, you know, the ideal condition from the Zen standpoint is this feeling of being part of it all, being one with things as they unfold. And, someday, if I do enough Zazen, there I won't have that feeling of being separate. Maybe just as a human being, I sometimes feel separate, you know. But when I began to, encounter other people and began to sort of start sharing their world, my sense of isolation disappeared, and then I really felt that I was part of it all. And this state of being part of it all is really, this is like the ideal condition from the Zen standpoint, to be part of it all. You know, not to have a boundary between ourself and the world, but to be allowing it to unfold so that it becomes, it's almost experienced as part of ourselves. You know, that might sound almost impossible, but we all have these moments where we're spontaneously one with things as they unfold. And they're usually moments of great joy and they're memorable, we don't always plan them. Sometimes they just happen, you know. I like to ride a bike along the canal, and the last time I did it, I've done it 1,000 times, probably not 1,000, but I've done it, I'm sure, more than 100 times. And I got on my bike with my wife, and we were riding through down the canal near Lambertville. And it was just heaven. It was just, I was just part of it all. We came up to this group of people who had just been river rafting, and we talked to them. And there was no boundary, you know, in the Xinxin Ming, and no boundaries are seen, right? It's like we're just, what's happening around me is happening as part of myself, you know. And this can this can occur spontaneously. Sometimes it can take a little work, as at the party, you know. And it often happens to us actually off the cushion, you know. You get on the cushion and you sit for a while and you get off the cushion, and sometimes you'll find that this kind of openness and spontaneity is very easily accessible. It's very present. When that happens, you know, at the end of Sesshin, people are, generally speaking, very open. They don't even know how open they are. But at the end of Sesshin, it's very hard to get everything taken care of, because people are, partly they're just happy that Sesshin is over, because it can be stressful in certain ways. It's challenging. But also, you know, they're very open. People don't realize, because they've been silent and they've been sitting still, but they get off the cushion and they're very lively. They have all this energy and they're encountering each other, and it's like their doors of perception have been opened. And so the presence of others can be really delicious or exciting can make you very happy for no apparent reason. You're just very happy to be present in the moment. And sometimes the noise at Sesshin gets to be very intense, you know, at the end of a Sesshin. People are talking and they're enjoying each other's company. But this is actually like a really wonderful condition to be in. This is just 100% present, and you're enjoying things as they arise, and you're experiencing them as part of yourself. You know, sometimes we sit on the cushion and you can experience things as part of yourself because those boundaries are down. So, you know, I've had many, many experiences where, you know, I'm in samadhi and I hear a bird and it just feels like it's coming out of my own body, or the rain, you know, the rain on a roof, you can hear that, and it's just like the rain is part of yourself. You know, this is the, from the Zen standpoint, this is like the unified mind in accord with the way. This feeling of of 100% being part of it all, you know. And yet, you know, this is not always easy to achieve, either on or off the cushion, you know. Sometimes, on the cushion, we find that we bring with us so much baggage, you know, so much. You sit down on the cushion, and right away there are your anger or your fear, or something's happened to you at work, or something's happened to you in your family life, and you can't process it. You know, you're just sitting there watching your breath, trying to process this. And you were probably oblivious to everything around you in that condition. You know, I have taught meditation at a lot of different places, and there was at one time we had a sitting group in Newark. And it was all these beginners, and maybe about 10 minutes into our sit, the classes would change, and there'd be a lot of noise in the hallway, and this really bothered me, because I thought, oh, these people are just learning how to do zazen, and I'll bet that noise is just making it impossible for them to sit. And afterwards, I talked to a couple people individually, and I said, well, was that noise really difficult for you to work with? And the person said, what noise? And it was because he was just, when he sat down to meditate, he was so absorbed in his thoughts. He was really oblivious to what was happening outside. This kind of self-absorbed state is called Ri. Okay, so Zen has a word for this, Ri, where you're totally in yourself, right? And everything outside disappears. You know, we say in English, this is like inwardness, we say. So you can be so absorbed that the world disappears, and sometimes in Zazen we're in that state, you know. And sometimes you can enter that state when you're uncomfortable, you know. I have to give talks in an academic setting sometimes. I have to talk to people. Sometimes when I give a talk, it's easy to give a talk because hardly anybody showed up to hear the talk. But sometimes I've given talks and actually, for some reason, lots of people show up. And I remember being on a panel at a conference where lots of people showed up. It was like a big panel. And it was just terrifying to me, you know. Public speaking was not easy for me. And when I would go to a conference, I would sit and practice in my hotel room. I'd practice my paper like four times before I would give it so I could get through it. And I remember I was giving this paper at a conference at the University of California in Santa Barbara, which is such a beautiful place. And for some reason, there were a lot of people in the audience. And when I looked at that audience, I just felt like I had, like I was a million miles away from them. You know, this sense of withdrawing into yourself was so powerful. You know, it was just like a hugely powerful. And of course, that made it worse when I had to get up and speak. It was just that sense of distance or like there was this huge, the Grand Canyon between me and these people, you know. And I was totally withdrawn into myself. Very difficult. You know, but of course, sometimes, you know, we're able to get outside of ourselves and connect, and there's a kind of naturalness that's so wonderful. So you know, one way to think about Zen is that we're going into ourselves to work through our obstacles, right? To work through the obstacles, and then when those obstacles disappear, the boundary between ourself and the world is going to disappear, and there'll be this natural spontaneity. That's one way to think about Zazen. And it's difficult to have that natural spontaneity, partly because of what you could call our karma, You know. And karma doesn't necessarily mean something you've done. You could think of it as your psychological obstacles or your mental habits. You know, a good example of karma would be something like this. My brother, when he was a little kid, we both went to a school in Maryland. My father was working at a naval base in outside of Baltimore. And my brother and I went to a new school, and we were the new kids at the school. And that's always a very difficult feeling, and because we were service kids, we moved a lot. Like every 2 years we'd go to a new school, and it was always difficult. You'd have to go to the class, and the teacher would introduce you, and all the kids would look at you like you were a Martian, right? And you didn't know anything about them, and sometimes kids were nice, and sometimes they weren't so nice, you know? But I remember just feeling like they were this sense of being withdrawn into myself was very strong. And finally some kid would come over and, you know, say something, and it's like, oh, you know, I'm getting out of this isolation. It's so good. Anyway, my brother was 2 years younger than I was, and he had a teacher whose name was Mrs. Nelson. And Mrs. Nelson was terrifying to him. She had done something to embarrass him in public, and my brother, just after a while, he would get so frightened to go to school. The thought of going to school would be so frightening to him that he would develop like nausea. So something, some small thing had triggered this fear in my brother, or this aversion to going to class. Maybe the teacher yelled at him in public or something, but it became part of him, and it began to produce this effect of like powerful anxiety so great he would feel like throwing up while he was waiting for the school bus. And he'd go in and beg my mother, I just don't want to go to school. Don't make me go to school. And of course, you have to go to school. This is like the creation. Sometimes something that's painful or difficult can create a barrier that we carry with us. You know, it's there long after the event. And sometimes we make that barrier even stronger because we're trying to protect ourselves. People can become very, you can begin to prefer to be alone because the challenge of being with other people is so great. You know, this becomes a strategy for dealing with tension and stress, is just to be by yourself where there's no one to stress you anymore. But all of these things create a kind of barrier. And so when we do Zen practice, you know, we sit down on the cushion and we enter this state of emptiness. And in that state of emptiness, we begin to encounter some of our barriers. And so, you know, a koan like this, neither speech nor silence, is likely to help you discover some of your own inner barriers. So maybe I give you the koan, and I say your koan is neither speech nor silence, and you come in day one and you talk, and I say talking is not a good answer to this koan, and then you come in the next day and you're silent, and I say silence is not a good answer to this koan. See, now you go back to your cushion, and maybe you begin, you know, you sit there in that emptiness for a while, and then finally you realize maybe something in your life that happened to you. Maybe you remember you had to get through Algebra 2 and you just couldn't do it, you know. Something like that happened to me, you know. When I started taking Algebra 1 in high school, I didn't really understand algebra. You know, the teacher would say 2x plus 3y equal 4. I just could not understand that. You know, it was like, what is X? What is Y? You know? And then, you know, she'd say 2X plus 3Y equals 4. You know, and then she'd give me another equation. Or it would just be a simple one. 2X plus 1 equals 4. And for some reason, I couldn't wrap my mind. I couldn't wrap my mind around that. And I didn't get the first step in algebra. And so then after that, you know, when we had multiple variables, it just got worse and worse, you know. And I would go home and I would stare at these numbers on the page. You know, what is X? I don't understand X. What is an X? You know, what? That's a letter. These are numbers. You know, they don't go together. You know, so I couldn't figure it out. And my father probably had trouble with algebra too, also, because he would come in and he'd look at the problems and he'd start solving them. He said like this. And he'd solve it. And how did you do that? You know, what is, he goes, what? You know, I couldn't get it. And my father would get impatient, you know, so that didn't help. And my mother, unfortunately, didn't really, I think, get beyond arithmetic or something, you know. So I would go to school, and I remember taking these tests, and I couldn't answer a single question. And I would get into that state where I would be sitting there taking the test, all the other students would be answering. And it was just like I would become totally right? Totally, it was like the world disappeared and I was by myself in my shame and terror of algebra, right? So this is, you could be working on a koan and all of a sudden you could remember sitting in seventh grade algebra class covered with shame and paralyzed by your fear, staring at this page which could have been upside down for all you know, for all the difference it made, right? So, you know, fortunately I had a really wonderful teacher. She kept saying, I'm not going to let you fail algebra. And I kept thinking, no, let me fail. Send me back. There was a math class you could take, like shop math or something, if you were not going to, you know, if you weren't planning to ever do anything again, you know. So, I said, put me in the shop math class, you know, let me out of here, you know. And she said, no, I'm not, you know, actually I actually got an A in algebra. It was amazing. And I got an A in algebra too. And then I got an A in trig, you know, and I got an A in calculus. But she made the difference. She was a teacher who made a difference, you know. But you know, maybe there wasn't a teacher there for you who made a difference, you know. So you're working through your koan and you suddenly realize you're suddenly back there in the seventh grade, terrified of these numbers, you know. And this koan practice can have this character where you're returned to the scene of the crime, so to speak, you know. And then all those powerful emotions are there. Only this time you can work them through because you also have access to this calm, stable, compassionate mind, and so some aspects of koan training involve, you know, going back to this place that was so painful and difficult, and gradually you sit with that and you work through the barrier, you know, and it's probably complicated. There's probably a lot of self-loathing there. There's probably a lot of other things. And it's probably, you know, if you have closed the door on yourself like that, it can affect you in many, many ways throughout your life, you know. If I hadn't had a good teacher to help me through algebra, I would have had a phobia about math all my life. And I wouldn't have gotten into the college I got into. You know, my life would be very different, if you have experiences in your earlier life that are painful and difficult, and you know, we tend to just, that barrier tends to stay in place. You know, it just stays there, it frozen in time, and continues to affect us as we're going through our daily lives. You know, and so you know. Probably it would be better to do some zazen and work through those barriers, you know, so that we can be more spontaneous and open. My secretary is a wonderful woman. We've been together for 20 years. Judy is her name. And she had a dog she really loved. His name was Taylor. He was a giant Labrador retriever. And she lives near my neighborhood, so sometimes when I would drive home at night, I would see her walking Taylor. And Taylor was such a giant lab, he would be dragging her down the street. You know, she lived in South Plainfield, and I'd see them walking along the park, and the dog would just be dragging her along. And he was just giant lab, very beautiful and affectionate animal. So anyway, I would say, "Did you walk Taylor?" And she'd go, "Oh, yes, that Taylor." You know, she'd say, "Oh." She clearly loved this dog. I mean, she has two kids. She never talked about her kids. When she talked about her dog, you know, her dog was like wonderful, you know. So anyway, you know, that Taylor, he's such a scamp. Or, oh, that Taylor, you know. And it was just 100% love, you know. There were no complications, you know. So anyway, Taylor died, like all things, you know. And she has not... You know, whenever I ask her, "Are you going to get another dog?" her face gets, and I don't do it very often because she just is so troubled, right? It's like her face gets almost like she looks like she's going to, you know, it's like frozen. And she's, you know, and it's just like, "No," you know, "No." You know, she doesn't say it like that, but it's just like she wants to get out of that conversation as, you know, fast as possible. So there's something there, right? She's closed a door on herself. You know, and she ought to get another dog. But I think his dying was so painful for her. You know, I think she just doesn't want to open up again. And Zen practice is really about that barrier between the self and the world disappearing so that there can be this spontaneity, right? And that means we have to do sometimes an awful lot of work on the cushion. To work through our, you know, to get through our barriers that we have left all these closed doors inside of ourselves, and so we're walking along, walking around, and we're only 45% present or 35% present, and that's maybe the condition of an average person, right? But you know, in Zen practice, this is sort of the art of opening up more of those doors so that we're present more than, say, 35 or 40% of the time. You know, we're present a lot. And when we're present, we have that trust to be, you know, it takes a lot of trust to be in the moment, right? It takes a lot of trust. And it takes a lot of trust to be in the moment without reservations or conditions. So the ideal condition in Zen is where Re and Be are the boundary between the interior and the exterior is dissolved, and there's this fluidity, you know, and this is called Zen spontaneity. That's what we're pursuing, what we're cultivating on the cushion. This sense spontaneity has other dimensions as well, you know. So for example, you know, when we feel separate from other people, we suffer ourselves, right? We suffer. That sense of separation is really like the one important source of human suffering. And when that boundary goes away, we feel better, we feel happy. That's really what happiness is all about, is being with the unfolding of things. You know, we all develop, you could say, blockages. We all develop phobias, fears, you know, disorders that prevent us from being present. You know, the worst condition is just to be constantly ill at ease in the world. That's really, from the Zen standpoint, that's really an unhealthy state. And sometimes that sense of separation can produce really dysfunctional behaviors. So So, like in the case of my dad, you know, my father, I think, never could open those doors, you know. And so he developed really what is essentially an addictive behavior, which is to drink all the time. And it made him feel open, right? And people who are unable to feel at ease in the world often develop addictive behaviors, you know. And I love my dad, but he was truly an alcoholic toward the end of his life. And I was ambivalent about it because I didn't know what, you know, he was actually sometimes happier when he was drinking, you know. But it took a real toll on his health. And the other problem with people who are unable to get outside of themselves is that they can cause a lot of damage to others. This is quite important to notice that, you know, when we are responding to other people in a very alienated mode, when we're responding to other people from our separateness, we often manipulate them or cause them pain in ways that we may not even allow ourselves to see. So, people, there are lots of injured people in the world, lots of people who have these barriers that they haven't worked through, and often it's astonishing how cruel or manipulative people can be, how they can exploit others or injure others, and seem to just cruise along without any kind of remorse, you know. And this is a function of a person who's very much trapped inside himself or herself. And it's a dangerous state because you're sort of perpetuating that unhealthy condition in your relations with other people. It's like having been hurt, one hurts others, right? And so one is alienated and one is sort of like spreading the virus of alienation, you know, as one moves through the world. And that's sad and it's quite common. So when you break out of your barriers, when you sit down on the cushion and you experience greater trust in life and you're able to be more fully present, sometimes that means you experience the suffering of others more acutely too, you know? And that's actually a good thing sometimes, right? You know, sometimes you cause somebody pain and you feel the pain yourself, you know? You feel their pain, quite literally, and that's a good thing. You go, oh my gosh, what have I done? And that's a good thing, actually. You know, say, I'm sorry, how can I make amends? Now, you know, sometimes we all make mistakes and there's no sense lacerating yourself over it, right? You know, I think people who do Zen, generally speaking, are very kindly people and they are maybe too hard on themselves, you know. So, you know, sometimes you didn't mean to hurt somebody's feelings and sometimes you did, but you can make amends. You can say, I meant to be, you know, I meant to hurt your feelings. I'm sorry I did, though, in retrospect, you know. That was not good of me, you know. But at any rate, people, you know, it's very important to be present in the world, not only for your own sake, but for the sake of those whom you might damage if you're not mindful, right? It's difficult to... We have all injured other people unknowingly and knowingly, and it's something we all have to wrestle with, but we can do our best not to do that, right? Not to to hurt other people and to proliferate this isolation. So a monk asks Fuketsu, both speech and silence are faulty in being re or be, to inside or to outside. He says, how can we escape these faults? You know, it's not about whether you speak or don't speak, it's about whether the inside and the outside are one, right? So if you're sitting on the cushion and you're working with this koan and you come in and you recite poetry to me, that might be quite an acceptable answer. And actually, your silence might be quite an acceptable answer, too, if it's the right kind of silence. A monk asks Fuketsu, both speech and silence are faulty in being Re or be, how can we escape these faults? Fuketsu said, I always remember the spring in Konan where the partridges sing. How fragrant the countless flowers. You know, the boundary is gone. You know, just this natural unfolding. Mumon's comment, Fuketsu's Zen spirit was like lightning and opened a clear passage. So, you know, Fuketsu was able to be 100% present in the moment a lot of the time. And so he was able to show other people how to be free. Now, that's what Mumon says first. And then Mumon says, however, he was entangled in the monk's words and could not cut them off. Now, at this point, Mumon is trying to confuse you. Okay? He's paying Fuketsu a compliment, but he's also trying to see if you have really learned how to be in the moment. And probably if his what he says here is troubling to you, then you need to do more zazen. He said, you can only really if you can really grasp the problem, you can readily find your way out. Now, putting language samadhi aside, say it in your own words. So again, it's not about words in silence, it's about this barrier disappearing. Mumon's verse, he has not used a refined phrase. Before speaking, he has already handed it over. So in that state of unified mind in accord with the way, you're not striving to do anything. You know, this happens to people, right? Sometimes, you know, sometimes you're sitting on the cushion and you're trying to be quiet and your mind is absolutely roaring, right? It's like your mind is just like so noisy. And sometimes you'll be at work and it will be like chaos and you'll suddenly realize this great stillness in the midst of all that noise, right? You know. And sometimes, you know, this is the best thing, you know. Let me just... yesterday, I had to give a paper at a conference at the Fashion Institute of Technology, which I had never been to, which is a wonderful place. And I met all these people who are like studying fashion, and they're incredibly creative. They all had blue hair, and you know, it was really a wonderful. I love that place, you know. So they were having a conference, and I had to give this paper, and the paper wasn't done. So Friday night. Thursday night, I came home and I worked on the paper until pretty late. And then I got up at 4:30 and I finished the paper. I was trying to get this thing done, right? And, you know, there was some tension, you know, because I wanted it to be a good paper. And, you know, I was really far behind. I should have gotten this project done a long time ago. So, you know, I worked until I was really, like, exhausted on Thursday night. And then I got up on Friday really early, and I finished the paper. I didn't have to teach or anything, so I finished the paper. And I had to give the paper at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, you know, and all during the morning, I'm trying to finish this paper, and there's like tension is building up, right? Tension. And then I think, I've got to get to the train by 12:45. You know, I've got to do this. You know, I got a shirt. And then I start to iron the shirt, and I notice there's like a spot on my shirt. You know, it's like, ah, you know, look at my watch. Ah, I've got a spot on my, that's my good shirt, you know. So then I look for another shirt. Ah, this is not quite right, you know. So anyway, I get the paper sort of done, you know. I print it. My printer isn't quite working. It's like, oh, brother, you know. So I get it printed. I have another shirt with no spot on the front that anybody can see. Get my tie, get on the train, get into the city. Fortunately, FIT is right, as I discovered, right down. It's right on 7th Avenue. It's 7th and 27th. You get out of Penn Station, take a right, you know, 7 minutes, and you're there. I get in. But anyway, I'm on the train, and I'm tense, you know. And all of a sudden, I think... You know, all of a sudden, it's just like, I am so happy to be here, you know? Going into New York, I don't work in New York, so when I go into New York, I often go into New York, like, to play. And so, for me, New York is just like this wonderful place, you know? So, you know, I'm going into New York. And I got out of Penn Station and I walked out and I just felt so damn happy, you know. It's like, I love being in New York, you know, I love this, you know. And I walked to FIT and it was just, FIT is really beautiful, you know. It's a beautiful campus right there in the heart of Manhattan. And all these students are bustling around and they all have, you know, incredible feathers in their hair, and they're all going to be in the, you know, clothing industry and the fashion industry, and you know, go up to the 8th floor of this building, and it's just like, oh, this is so beautiful, right? So beautiful. So you know, I had gone from like this very boxed in condition to like this. All of a sudden, everything's just flowing, right? It's just flowing. And sometimes in life this happens, right? It's just you're with the flow. It's all unfolding, and it's just being part of it all is just really great, you know? And I thought, I don't care if it's not a great... I did my best. It might not be the great paper. Nobody might come to hear it anyway, you know? And so who cares, you know? But I'm in New York. It's a beautiful day, you know? This is a cool place. I've never been here before. I mean... it just felt great, you know, great. That's like life, you know, when we can get, you know, now, I do think Zazen makes a difference, you know. I think you can turn around faster. I think you can be more open, you know. You know, lots of people don't have that experience of being in the flow, you know, or only very rarely. You know, they're always boxed in, always, you know, somehow I just turned around on the train and I felt like $1 million. And that's happened to me a lot, you know, that feeling. And we've all had it, but it's what we're aiming for in this practice. That feeling of just, I am so happy to be alive, you know. I think sometimes it happens, you know, in the midst of all that chaos, you sort of step back and then all of a sudden it's just flowing, you know. And you think, this is a madhouse, my office is a madhouse, you know? But it's just like, I'm so happy to be here.
Page 20. Shuzhou, go ahead.